Each ARC service provider is a trustless server that issues virtual transactions to users upon deposit. Those virtual transactions can be traded between users of the ASP off-chain at low cost, sent between users of different ASPs over Lightning, or redeemed on-chain at any time. The last point is crucial. Users can withdraw their ARC funds at any time, even if their ASP goes offline or ceases to exist. True self-custody. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And this show is brought to you by Swan Bitcoin, the place to buy Bitcoin and get on a Bitcoin standard, and CoinKite and the Cold Card hardware wallet to keep that Bitcoin safe. We've got a great little read today unpacking something that I think is really big news. Really exciting to see. I hope everybody had a wonderful Father's Day. But if you didn't catch it, or if you didn't hear me talk about it on one of the recent episodes, ARC finally has an implementation. Now, we talked to Burak, we talked about ARC a couple of times on the show almost a year ago now. In fact, it may have actually been like exactly a year ago. But ARC may be one of the holy grail models of a layer two system. And funny enough, he's essentially created a way to create a covenant-like environment without needing covenants. But funny enough is that this works a whole lot better with something like CTV, with covenants. In the same way that Hedgehog, which we talked about with Super Testnet very recently, is a fascinating update to Lightning with the same idea, with the same connector model that they created for ARC. But here's the crazy thing. This is seamless onboarding. You can receive a payment immediately with no upfront fees, no on-chain waiting, no nothing like that. You can immediately receive a payment within the ARC. You can then send out to Lightning. You can bridge to any of the other networks just like anything else, just like eCash, just like Lightning. You can talk to the world of Bitcoin and Lightning and send payments in any way that you want through the ARC service provider. And you have unilateral exit ability. You always own your keys. You can exit with the ARC. You can exit in 24 hours without the ARC. And you can do it even if the ARC says otherwise. You can always redeem your payment. And even if the ARC disappears and you can't contact anybody, but you can get a broadcast, you can broadcast a message, you can broadcast a transaction to the Bitcoin chain, you can get your Bitcoin. This is a true layer two. And this is not something to sleep on because it works today, apparently. So with that, let's get into today's read, and it's titled Introducing ARC Labs, a new venture to bring seamless and scalable payments to Bitcoin. From the ARC Labs blog on June 4th, 2024. Today, we are proud to unveil ARC Labs, a new company dedicated to building Bitcoin Layer 2 solutions based on the new ARC protocol. New alternatives to Bitcoin scaling are required. We've hit a watershed moment in Bitcoin adoption. Weeks of block congestion are becoming the norm and will continue to get worse as adoption continues to grow. This has led to rapidly increasing demand for scalable, lower-cost payment solutions. While the Lightning Network has made significant strides, it's unfortunately posing serious UX challenges for users, particularly when it comes to managing inbound liquidity. As a result, a significant and growing portion of Lightning users are turning to custodial solutions, which in many ways defeats the point of using Bitcoin in the first place. ARC was experimental. Until now. Enter ARC, A Layer 2 protocol proposed in May 2023, designed to offer speed and scalability without the burdens of liquidity management, for end users at least, and no compromises when it comes to self-custody. Until now, ARC has been a theoretical solution to Bitcoin scaling issues, but with the launch of ARC Labs, we are making ARC a reality. You will find a working ARC implementation on GitHub, link provided, today. Let us know if you'd like help firing up your own ARC service provider or wallet, and we've already started work on the first ARC-based services. ARC what? For anyone relatively technical, let me briefly describe ARC's mechanics. ARC is a novel approach to Bitcoin transactions, combining elements of payment channels, eCash, and Bitcoin itself. The network is made up of ARC service providers, or ASPs, which consumers and merchants connect to with light or, for example, mobile wallets. Comparing the structure of the Lightning and ARC networks. Each ASP is a trustless server that issues virtual transactions, or VTXOs, to users upon deposit. Those VTXOs can be traded between users of the ASP off-chain at low cost, sent between users of different ASPs over Lightning, or redeemed on-chain at any time. The last point is crucial. Users can withdraw their ARC funds at any time, even if their ASP goes offline or ceases to exist. True self-custody. Some key ways that ARC stands out. Frictionless onboarding. Unlike Lightning, users don't need some existing Bitcoin to open a channel and start making payments. Instead, after setting up an ARC wallet, a user can start receiving any amount of ARC transactions, or VTXOs, right away. Inbound Schminbound. Also, unlike Lightning, users never need to worry about inbound liquidity. They can receive as many virtual transactions as an ASP can support. Offline Receive. Users don't have to worry about their wallets going offline. They can receive their ARC transactions at any time. Like any system, there are some trade-offs. The burden of liquidity management doesn't just disappear. It's simply offloaded entirely to ASPs. However, ASPs are incentivized by transaction fees to take this burden on. Also, it's important to note that to withdraw funds from an ASP, a user must be able to afford at least one on-chain transaction. I've tried to keep things simple here, but you can find more detailed explanations at ARC Developer Hub. Link in the show notes. A complement for Lightning, not a replacement. All that said, we need to emphasize that ARC is not a replacement for Lightning. Instead, our view is that Lightning will, over time, take on more of an enterprise role, handling settlements between larger entities such as exchanges, federations, and ASPs, with ARC preferred by customers for digital payments and remittances. Our dual mandate. ARC Labs is committed to two main objectives. Maintain an open implementation of the ARC protocol. Our team is dedicated to developing and maintaining an open source implementation of the ARC protocol, GitHub link provided. If you're interested in contributing, we have a developer grant program launching soon. Can't wait for the announcement? Drop us an email here. And building services for the ARC protocol. We're already working on a handful of commercial services enabling Bitcoin users to leverage the ARC protocol. Stay tuned as we have some exciting announcements in store for the upcoming weeks. All aboard the ARC. ARC's finally here, and we're excited to pioneer new possibilities with Bitcoin payments. If you're interested in becoming an early adopter, we'd like to work with you. Whether you're looking to integrate ARC into your app, shape the protocol's development, or make some of the first ARC payments, drop us an email or subscribe to our newsletter. This episode is brought to you by Swan Bitcoin. If you have not bought any Bitcoin, literally right now, go straight to swanbitcoin.com/guy and just sign up and get a little bit of Bitcoin. And honestly, the best thing that you can do, something that I did for a lot of my family members, for my sister-in-law, for a lot of different people, is just set them up when they were like, I don't know, I can't afford it, I don't know how to do it, etc. they felt uncomfortable about it was just set them up extremely quickly and very easily to get $2 a week, $10 a month, just something, just get exposure. And Swan Bitcoin is the no-nonsense way to do it. It's not an exchange that's going to put a bunch of charts in front of you and tell you to trade. They're not going to push a bunch of shitcoins on you. It is Bitcoin only, and it is an easy way to just get started. Then when you go back, you will literally find all of the resources you need to hold your own keys, to set up a retirement account or an IRA, a business account, to set up a long-term vault as you ramp up what you're buying. And for the first $10,000, which could be in one day, could be in 2 years, who knows, there are no fees right now for Swan Bitcoin. So if you sign up and start buying, you're just going to get one-to-one dollar for Bitcoin. And from there, you will find all of the resources, the knowledge, the Bitcoin-only services that you need to up your game, to go from zero to a Bitcoin standard. Check them out at swanbitcoin.com/guy. I do not want to underestimate the power of unilateral exit with no onboarding friction. These, I believe, are the two biggest problems where one of these problems exists in essentially every form of layer two that we have to date. Lightning has onboarding issues. Lightning has upfront fees for on-chain, getting on-chain access because it's one-to-one. So essentially you have to quote-unquote open an account online or on Bitcoin, which is just opening a UTXO with a balance so that you can then trade and connect into the Lightning network. So it will always have an on-chain fee if constructed, if done with the way that Lightning is one-to-one with a user holding their own keys. If you want them with unilateral exit and they are using Lightning as it exists today, that will always be present. It simply will. Then the alternative of something like eCash or a Federation, Liquid and a completely different sidechain model is these things have no upfront onboarding. They have their own fee structure, which is universally far, far less. I mean, the whole point of it would be to have a fee structure that's way less than Bitcoin on chain, comparable, if not the same, as Bitcoin on Lightning. But none of them have a unilateral exit. If the Federation, if the service provider, whoever it is who is making this quote-unquote layer two, this additional payment network ecosystem viable, making it work, if they go offline, if they disappear, the users cannot get their funds back. Arc is the first truly layer two protocol that I know of that solves both of these problems. And amazingly, also is traded around like eCash. It has blind signatures for updating transactions. Or actually, now that I think about that, when I'm going through how the transactions work, it may be that only the covenant version of it, as I understand, I haven't in great detail wrapped my head around exactly how the keys and the forfeit transaction and these things work. But I do have a general idea, and the way that you have to do pre-signed transactions currently, because we do not have covenants like CTV or the various other covenant proposals, OpVault, but because we don't have those, I don't think you can, it still requires signatures from both parties, from both the ASP and Alice or whoever the user is, to create a pre-signed transaction rather than actually have those transactions deterministically linked without two signatures, but with a CTV payment from one to the next, so that the script itself is basically enforcing the fact that if somebody tries to double spend a previous transaction, well then no matter what, the next one is still the only one that can be spent, or the new one is going to replace it because that's the only place it can go. So I have to dig a little bit deeper into that before I boldly make that claim that there is privacy within the Arc in the fashion that is eCash, because eCash does have incredible privacy. And it's really interesting to see how these are all going to work together. But I think another piece that we will read probably this week, that is another one from Breeze, from Roy Scheinfeld, I think is really going to help to illustrate just how powerful all of this is working together. Because the Lightning Network is truly the thing, the web, the decentralized network that is connecting all of this stuff together. And this is why I think Lightning is still, you know, he specifically says in a section in this that I say he because I'm just assuming this is Burak who wrote this, but Arc Labs is probably a group of people now. But we've had Burak on the show when we were talking about this back when the proposal dropped and the first announcement that this even was an idea. But it's really, really cool, like fascinating proposal. And I think the potential for privacy, the potential privacy benefits are just enormous for this because it can be constructed in that way. Though it may be something that's dependent on a covenant, a specific covenant proposal. And I will double check and make sure one way or the other. But the really big thing, privacy or not, is that this allows onboarding to Bitcoin to unilaterally redeemed Bitcoin that is censorship resistant without any upfront cost, where the experience of sending and receiving your first, your second, your 20th, your 100th payment is exactly the same. And what you ever need, the only thing you ever need to prove that you are the owner and to enforce it with or without your ASP, with or without anybody else, by yourself, censorship resistant on the Bitcoin, on the global Bitcoin permissionless network, is your transaction. Honestly, that is essentially the holy grail of layer twos. And when he talks about that, you know, Bitcoin is not a replacement, Arc is not a replacement for Lightning. What I think Arc is a replacement for banks. One of the things we talked about extremely early on in this show, which I saw as a way that this future was going to be orders of magnitude better, and how I saw what would be eventually a Lightning channel pool, and what that idea would be, or what kind of the perfect conception of a group Lightning instance would be one where I said, imagine a bank. This was the analogy that I used, was imagine a bank where you had all the extremely cheap fees, everything settled instantly, you know, payments were done as soon as you sent them. You could get privacy depending on which bank you used and which protocol they used. But that if your bank ever attempted to refuse you from making a payment, or ever attempted to freeze your funds, or confiscate your funds, you could always go to the Bitcoin chain and reject the bank's ability to do this. And that Bitcoin would be the arbiter as to who owned your account, and you would be the only one with the keys to do so. This is that system. Arc doesn't replace Lightning. Lightning is like a global inter-business, inter-bank, inter-institutional and entity and service provider and server and super node or super user, prosumer even, interconnected decentralized network for payments. And Arc is a replacement, I believe, for banks, for exchanges, for financial institutions, because this is a way for those institutions to essentially provide all and any of the concept of centralized services without ever having the degree of risk and liability of holding everyone's funds in an account. And for the user to always know nothing is ever rehypothecated, because you have proof of reserves, because you are holding the exit transaction, which is either valid or not based on the signatures. End of story. You can tell it is in the tap tree or it's not real Bitcoin. And thus your client would never sign it because it's not real. This is huge. That is huge. This is proof of reserves with easy onboarding, with unilateral exit, and with the ability for a centralized service to provide you something, provide a service non-custodially, without all the limitations, without the user side frustrations of the Lightning Network. Granted, there is a much larger liquidity problem for the ASP than for a Lightning service provider, but it's not vastly bigger, especially because of some of the corrections or some of the improvements that they have made to ARC. The original implementation of it, which I think I talked about this recently, the original implementation of it required a lot more liquidity from the ARC in order to actually continue to operate. And they've basically figured out a way to recycle and reuse the old funds in an easier way, or in a quicker way, so to speak, so that the liquidity provisions are actually shorter over time. Because what would essentially happen is the ARC would essentially run, if you made too many payments within a certain span of time, the ARC could essentially run out of funds to fulfill new payments because each one is still locked. There's a locking period for each thing. And so basically the ARC doesn't just need money for, or need Bitcoin for each individual balance, but also the payments within those balances over a locking period in which they're guaranteeing the funds, or which the signatures guarantee the funds. So a couple of interesting nuances about this is that when, let's say Alice receives a payment, when Alice receives a payment, there is immediately Alice and the ARC together can redeem the payment. So cooperating with the service provider, there's instant transactions to anything, to Lightning, to some other Fediment, to somebody else within the ARC, or to on-chain. The ARC service provider is an instant, okay, you want to cooperate with me, boom, these funds can go anywhere and do anything that they can on Bitcoin, the Bitcoin stack, period. Then there is a 24-hour period where Alice can spend it by herself. So after 24 hours, like let's say the ARC, Alice gets a transaction, then the ARC just disappears. Like a bomb goes off, or a dude just has a heart attack and, you know, the keys just vanish with him. They were in the ARC provider's head for some reason. And they just vanish into thin air. They die, whatever it is. No provider, no computer, no nothing. Well, in 24 hours, Alice can spend these coins by herself. Now on the ARC side, Alice's transaction essentially expires, and she can't do it, or that's not true. She can always unilaterally exit. But let's say what happened was that the ARC didn't actually disappear, just lost internet connection for 3 weeks or 4 weeks. Well, after a month, which the time period specifically is 4 weeks, so I guess it would be like two epochs. I'm not sure if this is a relative or absolute time lock. Like, is it a block height, or is it based on the time code? But regardless, there is a roughly 4 week lock, time lock on this, such that the ARC can redeem the funds if Alice does not refresh. However, Alice can just refresh by just opening her wallet. So essentially these things are like Bitcoin checks that can be unilaterally spent within 24 hours, but within 4 weeks, they can be unilaterally redeemed by the ARC. So they have expirations on them. Just like your credit card has an expiration, a check has an expiration, you can't cash it after a certain span. I can't remember exactly how it works. But it's actually a really clever setup so that the ARC can continually refresh funds after 4 weeks. And Alice simply needs to come back online. And anytime the ARC is refreshing the main UTXO that is the ARC balance, so to speak, that all of this is happening underneath, this is in a tap tree underneath a single UTXO, is when when Alice comes back online, is that anytime she just refreshes, like, well, this could obviously be done entirely in the background, she just needs to come back to her wallet, and then the next time the ARC service provider updates the main UTXO, the main transaction, at which I think is on the 24-hour mark, so it's like every day, well, then she has a new four-week period. So as long as she basically opens her wallet once a month and does something with it or receives a payment or anything like that, well, then she always has another 4 weeks to before she has to worry about any expiration or anything like that. So it really is, like, insanely powerful. The trade-offs are very, very... And honestly, the trade-offs are a little bit less frustrating than Lightning, even with solving one of Lightning's main problems. So Lightning doesn't have that kind of asymmetrical time lock. Lightning has a universal time lock for both parties. It's one-to-one. You know, the service provider or the person, the node that you have connected to is an equal and opposite channel partner. So if you wanted unilateral exit, you have to wait a week. If they want unilateral exit, they have to wait a week. And if they broadcast the transaction and a week goes by and you don't come in to enforce your version of the transaction, which will get their funds, which will redeem their funds back to you, well, then you lose it. But then if you want to unilaterally close and you want to exit on your own, you also have a one week time lock. So your time lock is later, and the ability that you have to enforce is, or your time lock in ARC is shorter for when you can have funds. It's only a day. And your time lock to be able to enforce your ownership is a month. So you have a longer time to, basically the ARC service provider is kind of taking on greater risk and greater liquidity in order to provide a more seamless experience to provide this new model. Now, the one thing that I do not understand, because I thought, and I may be just wrong about this, because when I was looking in the payments and how things are broadcasted, I was thinking that in the model, the way they were explaining it, in fact, I may have just said this a minute ago incorrectly. Sorry, I'm still working through the structure of this thing, is that every 24 hours the pool transaction is updated. But then there was another thing that said that new transactions are broadcast every 5 seconds, which would mean, and I think this would be that each transaction is actually replacing the last transactions, because I remember talking about this with Barak when we first had him on the show, is that there's a very large transaction burden for the ARC, but that each one of these 5 seconds, I think they're replacing the old transaction, so it's just under the context, like, it's still one transaction every block, if I'm not mistaken, because if I remember, the thing that stuck in my head as the limitation is that if we have 3,000 transactions per block, and each one of these ARCs is taking up one of those transactions every single block, then theoretically, the max that we could have of the number of ARCs in the world is 3,000, at least from an on-chain, a directly on-chain perspective. So I want to explore that more and see if, I'm curious why it's necessary for every possible block to have a transaction. Because going back to the idea of Fediment that I talked about, is that I'd be very interested to have a, you know, your transactions are pending for 6 hours or something like that, or for a few hours in a Fediment, and then building a CTV tree for every user with a redeemable transaction, ability to make a redemption ownership, so to speak, a forfeiture of a new update. So like if Alice sends a transaction to Bob and it's still within the pending, Bob can still enforce his ownership if Alice tries to double spend. And then in context of Alice trying to double spend against the ARC is at risk of Alice's transactions for a month, for the entire 4 week period that the ARC refreshes, while the ARC must come back online within 24 hours to enforce it, because Alice's ability to unilaterally pay it is only 24 hours. So basically, the ARC is at risk, the service provider is at risk for 4 weeks, the user is only at risk or has a limitation of up to 24 hours. But I feel like there's got to be, that there's not only is this itself, just like by itself, an extremely interesting protocol and something that could be massively useful in onboarding to Lightning, to eCash, to all of this stuff in a way that is fully self-custodial, where your keys are the determining factor as to whether or not you own those coins. That is a huge deal. Like, I cannot stress how important of a thing that is, in my opinion. However, when we go back, when we talk about Hedgehog and the ability to push payments over Lightning without needing the dual signature, essentially acting like a tiny covenant, which is funny because Hedgehog is actually created with that connector concept, which is actually built in Arc. So this is Lightning with the same type of payment model as Arc. And then when you can use this VTXO, you can create this new transaction as a Lightning channel. You can actually have this go to an address that is a two of two with someone else. So I could have a Lightning channel with you, where our redemption of that is actually enforced by the Arc, not by the Bitcoin chain itself. But then the Arc's enforcement is built on chain. So it's two steps removed. It would require a larger exit transaction because you would need to pay the Arc's fee plus the Bitcoin fee in order to get back on chain. But you may be able to just settle it within the Arc, which is what could potentially be crazy about this. And then you combine Hedgehog and the ability to just push payments and have like an eCash thing where all I have to do is send you the details and then you can essentially consider the payment done. Man, when you start combining these together and then going back to the idea of Fediment, is what if you can still just receive eCash and that eCash can be pending and then you have an Arc set up that Fediment is actually based off of that updates, rather than broadcasting a transaction every 5 seconds, it updates every hour. It updates once a day. So you spread out that transaction burden and you just let there be more risk to a certain, you would have it specifically to either a certain amount or up to a certain number of payments or something. So like, let's say, I think we have not properly thought about our protocols, or at least in my opinion, thought about our protocols in the context of how much is being transacted and how much trust we need. Like, I have no problem dealing with pending transactions or trusted transactions as like an eCash credit up to like $10. Honestly, up to like $50. Because I know that I'm only at risk to that. However, if I receive an eCash transaction that is $100 or $500, I might want to just pay whatever the fee is right now to get in the very next pool transaction. And so if a Fediment is actually set up like an Arc with just far slower, far more spaced out, and therefore a far cheaper setup of pool transactions, and basically they just have people pay a potential fee for the degree of transaction. So like, if I have 200 pending payments, but they're all 20 sats, don't care. I'm just going to wait. I'll just wait until they do another pool transaction themselves and it's funded properly. And then boom, I have unilateral exit of those 220 sat payments for the 4,000 payments or 4,000 sats. However, if I receive one $500 eCash payment and it's pending, I might just go ahead and throw a dollar, like just throw 3,000 sats and be like, I want this included in the very next pool transaction in the very next block. And then if there are enough funds to change that period where people are just requesting finalized payments and paying the Fediment Arc or the eCash Arc to enforce that, well, then you just make an out-of-schedule update transaction and, again, pool everybody together. And, you know, so you either know that it's going to be done pending in 6 hours or whatever the block period is, or enough people who have received big payments want to go ahead and finalize it. And so maybe you get maybe you close out all the pending transactions way faster than you think. And an interesting thing that would align just in that idea of it, an interesting way that it would align is that it means that the Arc or the Fediment or the whatever, the provider, doesn't have a huge transaction cost burden on an ongoing basis whether or not people are making transactions. If nobody makes any transactions, well then, why update the pool transaction? If all of the same thing, if the pool transaction means it is the exact same ownership, why do you need to broadcast one every 5 seconds? You just wait until transactions are made. And then if there are any pending transactions, you do it on your schedule. And if there's an enormous amount of activity paying good fees and there's plenty of block space and the fees are affordable, well, then we can just get confirmation constantly. We can just get maybe even though the schedule is every 6 hours to clear out pending transactions or every 24 hours even, maybe we actually get one every other block because there's just a ton of activity on this network and on this system to close out transactions, and it is still profitable for the eCash Mint, the Fedimint, or the ARC itself to continue to close that. So I'm still, that was the one thing that got me in the original architecture, is that which is an interesting dynamic in the ARC, is the fact that their transactions are broadcast at such a huge rate in order to kind of give that, well, it's been submitted to the pool at least, you know, the broadcast network of Bitcoin is aware of the transaction, therefore you at least have a mempool level security in the fact that your ownership is likely to end up in a block. But the burden is so high that it means that ARC kind of scales in the opposite of Lightning. So Lightning is fantastic and can scale to millions and millions of channels and millions of users and all of this stuff, and it operates kind of as a futures contract on Bitcoin chain space because you eventually have to settle or change liquidity. But it can operate where only the things that need to move can shift. So it's very dynamic in the fact that some nodes and some channels can go offline and then come back up, change liquidity from one node to another, from one area of the network to another. But none of it ever has to, it all moves very individually and in kind of a very fluid way. Whereas ARC would scale not from users, but from centralized entities. So even though it is self-custodial and unilateral ownership, it is heavy towards a few massive providers. And in fact, because of the transaction load that is required for the for the provider, if we're talking about the every 5 seconds broadcast for a mempool transaction that's just replacing the other ones, if we're talking about that level, well then basically having a tiny ARC, like if I wanted to have an ARC for the Audionauts and just do a couple of, so people can just do a couple of transactions every day, well, that would not be even slightly economical. It would cost me more than I could possibly, I'd have to charge 10 times the Bitcoin transaction fees to put a pool transaction in every block, then would even, I'd be doing more Bitcoin transactions than ARC transactions. Like it would be reverse scaling. So it only works at scale. Whereas Lightning works between two people who might be making just a couple of transactions. ARC only works if you have a lot of people and a lot of transactions, because there is a necessary kind of on-chain burden for how the ARC enforces things. But after it reaches a threshold of paying for itself, then it can essentially scale indefinitely, and it's economically more and more powerful the bigger it gets, or more and more efficient the bigger it gets. So I'm really curious how you could change the dynamics of this to get the best of all worlds while allowing trust up to certain amounts. You know, going back to the idea of like even regulations are that way, like as crazy as and onerous as the financial regulations are, like you still don't have to have like explicit KYC and all of this stuff for like up to $600, you know, like it doesn't need to be reported. Well, what if you literally made a Fedimint or an eCash system that literally did that? That everything was pending up to $600, and then it would automatically roll over into a new pool transaction like ARC update, or after a period of time, it would automatically roll over no matter what the balance was, but that you had those thresholds that were literally trust based on trust. So how much am I trusting you? What is my trust threshold? Do I want on-chain settlement and pay, you know, 100 sats or 1,000 sats for it at every 10,000 sats worth of balance? Or am I fine to take that risk up to 500,000 sats, you know, whatever it is? So I think there's just a lot to unpack in utilizing this protocol, and it is so exciting to see this as a working implementation. Apparently, you can already run this on Liquid, which has covenants, so you can run it in the covenant model. And also, this is another good reason why I think CTV, we need CTV on Bitcoin. I think it's a really, really promising and awesome proposal. And for anybody who followed my journey from aggressive CTV hater to CTV supporter, you know my argument there. And if not, you can go digging back to the episodes, because we covered like 10 episodes on it before I kind of knew. I knew it well enough that I thought, okay, yeah, I'm fully in support of this. I think this is the best covenant proposal, and it does not change any of the security dynamics of Bitcoin as it stands. So anyway, huge shout out to the team, to Arc Labs. Congratulations on this announcement and finally bringing this to life, so to speak. Super, super excited about it all. A shout out to Swan Bitcoin and CoinKite and the Cold Card Hardware Wallet for supporting this show, for getting me my Bitcoin, and for keeping my Bitcoin safe. Check them out. Links and details in the show notes. Love you to all the Audionauts. I will catch you on Keet. I will catch you on Noster. And until next time, everybody, take it easy, guys. Rise and rise again until lambs become lions. Robinhood.